Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. When you touch your toddler's forehead and it feels like they're burning up, it's only natural to hit the parent panic button and wonder, do I need to make a visit to the emergency room? Or maybe not. With me on the show tonight is Dr. Shanti Thomas-King to tell us how to confidently measure and manage your child's fever safely and effectively. Then you can give your toddler the relief that they need. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Joining me today is Dr. Shanti Thomas-King. She's a pediatrician and part of the Johns Hopkins Community Physicians Group in Howard County. Dr. Shanti, welcome to Go Healthy for Good.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, babies and young children get a lot of illnesses. What's the typical frequency of illnesses?
Children usually get about 6 to 12 viral illnesses in a year. And if they're in daycare, usually about 10 to 12 is normal.
Is that right? So 6 to 12 if they're at home, but a little more if they're in daycare because?
Because they're just exposed to many different viruses. Their immune system is still a little immature, and they're constantly putting their hands in their mouths and rubbing their eyes, and that's why always constantly exploring.
And what are the commonest illnesses?
The most common illnesses are viral illnesses. Colds are definitely the most common illnesses. But we see pneumonia, croup, urinary infections, many viruses and bacterial infections.
So there can be viral illnesses that are simply a passing thing, or more. You've mentioned some more serious ones like pneumonia and urinary infections mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
How could a parent tell the difference between some of those common ones?
So a common virus usually is going to last you generally a week, sometimes up to 10 days. And you're looking for, the main thing you're looking for is how your child is acting. Are they inconsolable? Are they extremely fussy or irritable? Are they very dehydrated? So those are the things that you're looking for, is how long are they not acting their normal self. I mean, most kids, when they get a fever or a virus, they are kind of down for a few days, but kids are pretty resilient and they perk up pretty fast.
Yes, they are. You mentioned dehydration. How mm-hmm. might a parent tell if their baby or their toddler is dehydrated?
For a baby, the main way to tell is how many wet diapers they're having. So, you know, normally a baby would have at least 8 wet diapers or so a day. So if you're significantly decreased from that, or they're just a little bit more lethargic, not very active, that's the main way you're going to tell. And for a baby whose fontanelle is still open, if they're very dehydrated, it'll actually be sunken in their head.
So their soft spot will,
their
be,
soft spot,
will
exactly.
be sunken.
Yes.
And that would be quite a serious
Correct.
Level of dehydration
yes.
by
so,
then.
Yes, so you would go to the hospital for that.
Right, and we want to spot it earlier than that.
Correct.
So just to be alert for that. And then an older child, how might you tell if a toddler, you know, their soft spot's closed, how might they, and then they're maybe no longer wearing diapers mm-hmm. during the day, how might you detect their level of dehydration?
You would look at their lips are a good sign. So if they're, their lips are dry, that's probably the first clue you would see, besides their just activity level, just lying around, not wanting to do much.
Now, from remembering back to my pediatric days, sometimes their eyes can seem a little sunken too. Can
Correct.
They?
They can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But often when they're lethargic, they have that look anyway. So that can be a little challenging. Now, children seem to raise a temperature very easily compared with adults. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
It has to do with their immune system, and so they're exposed to many viruses that they haven't been exposed to before. So their body is trying to develop a memory, so to speak. And so that's why they develop the fevers.
So does a fever always signal an infection, or can they raise a fever with even just something as physiological as teething?
Generally, fever definitely indicates some sort of infection. Now, you can't always tease out viral or bacterial initially, but generally teething, no, you're not going to get a temperature that's 101 or higher with teething. The studies, they don't show that maybe your body temperature will raise maybe half a degree, but it's not. A lot of parents think, oh, 101, 102, my kid is teething, but no, it's generally not. A fever is just your body's way of signaling your immune system to fight off something. We have to start fighting an infection.
So fever is part of our immune response to infection.
Correct.
All right.
Yes.
Well, that makes good sense. What's a normal temperature?
Normal temperature is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 37 degrees Celsius. A fever is considered anything greater than 100.4.
So 100.4, 98.6. Now, how do you take the temperature of a wriggly little one who really doesn't understand what you want to do? I've got a baby doll here. I haven't given her a name yet. Perhaps we should. But let's say that she's looking a little bit flushed, a bit irritable, and you're thinking, what's her temperature? And you're her mom. How would you take her temperature? What would you recommend?
So if this is a baby, a rectal temperature is definitely the most accurate to do.
That's pretty scary for parents to do.
Yes.
A rectal temperature.
Yeah, so but it's really not so bad. So hopefully we can...
Does it hurt baby?
No, they feel a little...
Discomfort?
Annoyed, but yeah.
Annoyed.
Mainly because they're cold, but it doesn't hurt them.
All right.
And you're not going to damage anything.
And an older child, how would we measure temperature?
An older child, a school-age child, 4 to 5 years, you could do a oral by mouth temperature. You could also do an ear temperature as well. Axillary under the arm really is not as reliable, but either oral or ear is good.
Let me hold baby for you.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, we've got a few thermometers here. Can you walk us through these different ones? What would you use that one for?
So this is a regular digital. This is a pretty common one that you would find in any pharmacy or store. So this, you would just press the button. This, you could use this rectal, and you just press the button. It's all it needs is this. This is the sensor probe right here. And you just press the button, and it would normally beep when the temperature is done.
So that's just a straight, rigid thermometer. That could be used for rectal plus
In the mouth,
oral, and
under the arm.
Axilla. So if I were to do an auxiliary temperature, I'd want to pop that under baby's arm or the
Correct.
Child's arm, right underneath,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that that tip
is right under the
is
armpit.
Right under, and then
hold their arm,
hold their arm and Correct. Distract them with a toy. So you need two things, a thermometer and a toy,
yes.
right? Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it'll probably fall out pretty quickly.
All right. And it doesn't take long for a thermometer nowadays.
No.
A digital will work quite
quickly,
quick. So you don't have to hold them for too long. But you wouldn't want to be doing an oral temperature in a little baby.
No.
Right?
No.
So that's why you'd need to use the rectal.
The rectal.
Can you just show us how we might do a rectal thermometer? This is a special thermometer
mm-hmm.
that's flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives mums and dads a little more confidence to do the rectal. Probably makes no difference to the baby, does it?
No, it doesn't.
All right. Can you show us perhaps
sure.
how we might... Oh, okay. You might want to put the probe on.
So the first thing you always want to do is to make sure you're going to clean...
So most thermometers come with the probe cover that mm-hmm. You can use, and you can buy extra ones. And then if you're doing a rectal, you would want to use a lubricant, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that it would be more comfortable for the baby. So you might put that on the
Just a little bit on the tip.
Just a little bit on the tip. Yep. All right. Why don't I hold that for you while you deal with baby, and I'll pass that to you in a minute.
Okay. So there's two ways you can do a rectal temperature. So the first is you can have the baby...
You can turn bubs around.
Yeah. So first you want to have the baby on the back, and then you would just hold the legs up, and then you would insert just till the end of that probe.
So the silver, till the silver is gone, so
correct.
Maybe a half an inch.
Half an inch. So you would just insert it, make sure you hold the baby's legs so that the cheeks are actually closed, because sometimes it can come back out.
Yep, right. And the baby can pop because the thermometer is there. So don't do this in your favorite armchair.
No.
All right.
And so you just wait till the beep. It's usually maybe 20, 30 seconds.
All right.
And then the other way that you could do it is put the baby on the stomach and then...
And baby
back. Sorry. And then that's you right. could insert it this way.
So you'd have baby laying across your knee.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then you would do it that way.
Okay. Great.
I found that usually on the back they tend to be a little bit more comfortable because they're still able to look at you.
Right. So on the back works better for most in terms of distracting them while they're...
Correct.
Okay. Now, can you give us some guidelines about temperatures? You mentioned 104, 101, 98.6. Mm-hmm. So 98.6 mm-hmm. was normal.
Correct.
When would a parent start to think that something was wrong and need to be concerned?
Okay. So you're looking at, so if you feel your child has a temperature, you always want to measure the temperature because children can feel very warm and not really have a temperature. And if it is a temperature, you're looking at not just the number, but you're looking at how your child is acting. Can you console them? Are they still hydrated? Are they still making good wet diapers? Those are the main things you're looking for. And then, of course, if it's a baby, if they're less than 2 months, then a fever is a fever, and that's considered an emergency. So you would definitely want to see your doctor, go to the hospital that day. So it's also the age group and also how long your fever is lasting. So generally, if your temperature is lasting longer than 3 to 4 days and you continue to get high fevers, then it's good definitely to go see your doctor.
All right. So we have some graphics. Let's just run through them.
Okay.
So on our graphics, I think if the temperature is elevated over 104, then you're saying go to the doctor. If babies between birth and 2 months, any temperature, you'd still go straight to the doctor because they're so small.
Correct.
At 2 to 12 months, if it looks like it's a viral illness, just watch them for a couple of days before going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to be okay. Of course, watching that temperature, because if it gets really high, you're still going to want to go there. If they're a year or over and it's a likely a viral illness and you're observing them and their behavior is satisfactory, of course they're going to be grumpy and sniffly. But observe them for 3 or 4 days, and if it doesn't resolve, then go to the doctor.
Correct.
Well, what an informative show we're having today. If you're a parent, if you're planning on being one, then you don't want to miss our next segment. And you know what? Beginning today, you can also text us. Yes, just grab your phone, send us a text message to 301-960-5144. That's 301-960-5144. If you want to call us from overseas, you can use that very same number. Again, it's 301-960-5144. Of course, if you're in the US, you can call us on our 855-400 healthy number. That's 855-400-4325. And I have a pediatrician right at the end of the phone. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words, no sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world.
Back. Joining us today is Dr. Shanti Thomas King, a pediatrician from Johns Hopkins Community Physicians Group. Before taking the break, we were talking about some guidelines about how to manage a temperature. Mm-hmm. Now, there's one illness that really frightens not just parents, but also health professionals. Mm-hmm. What illness is that?
Meningitis.
Now, tell us, how might meningitis present? How might baby look?
So meningitis definitely is very seriously. It's something we treat very aggressively. Of course, there is viral and bacterial meningitis too, but bacterial meningitis spreads very quickly and your child gets very sick. So depending on the age...
It's minutes to hours, isn't it?
Correct.
It's just so fast.
Yes. So depending on the age group, you're going to see different signs. So for the infants... of course, there is a fever, but not always. But fever, you're looking for, we were talking about the soft spot being sunken with dehydration. With meningitis, it's actually going to be bulging. So you're going to feel it be bulgy when you look. And so usually they will vomit and just not active at all, not wanting to feed, looking lethargic.
Really ill.
For older, and 0 to 2 months are definitely one of the at-risk for meningitis. And meningitis is when the tissues that surround the brain and the spinal cord get inflamed and infected. And so with the older kids, they also have a fever. They will have vomiting, just neck pain, not wanting to really do much of anything. Once you get into the older age group, then they start complaining about stiff neck and a real sensitivity to bright light.
So they shield their eyes.
Correct.
And
they just don't
they
want...
They just have a really...
Yes, and
neck.
Usually they're, you know, in the bed, don't want to move because everything just hurts. Even if they try to lift up themselves up, it's going to hurt.
And there's one thing that's very characteristic of meningococcal meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rash.
The rash,
right?
Correct.
And I think we have a graphic here of the rash.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. And one thing about this rash is you can do a test on it. You can hold just a normal drinking glass, if it's clear, and you can press that up against the skin. And if that rash does not change color, it doesn't blanch to a pale, then it's meningococcal meningitis, and you need to rush for medical help. Now, why, just talking about temperatures in general, mm-hmm. not meningitis particularly, mm-hmm. why is it important to keep children's temperatures down?
The main thing is you want to keep them comfortable. And the other thing is febrile seizures. So some kids can get a seizure with a high fever. It's not a magic number for every child, but in general, that's the reason why. Now, febrile seizures... occur in about 2 to 5% of children, but mainly in the 6-month to 5-year age group.
So 6 months to 5 years old, mm-hmm. if they have a fever, there is a risk of a seizure. No magic number of what temperature it might be when that mm-hmm. happens. A very scary thing when it does happen, and we call it a febrile seizure. Is it damaging?
No.
Will it harm the child?
No.
Not at all.
No
harm to their brain.
Yeah, no brain damage, no permanent damage, no risk of having a seizure disorder. But if it happens less than one, there is about a 50% chance that they could get another febrile seizure in a little bit.
So if they're prone to it,
yes.
They're kind of prone to it.
Yeah.
You're an unlucky mom.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Less than one.
So febrile seizures are more harmful to parents than to little ones, right? Now, what supportive care might we give during that time? We mentioned dehydration, mm-hmm. of course. How are we going to get fluids into bubs?
So,
or even toddlers?
Fluids, different ways you can give them fluids is popsicles, Jell-O, ice chips. It's also most kids tend to want to drink when they have a fever because your body tends to get dehydrated with fever. So generally you'll see that kids don't want to eat, but they will definitely be drinking. And it's also good to give them, besides water, like an electrolyte type of solution too, to keep all their electrolytes in balance as well.
And we could get that at the local pharmacy or...
Yes, even grocery stores.
Even grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And if they're not wanting to eat, should we worry?
No, not too much. The main thing is you want them with fluids. So pretty much whatever they want to eat, just give it to them.
All right. And they're going to be losing extra fluid because they're breathing hard, they're sweating,
mm-hmm.
they may have diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. Their heart's beating fast.
Their heart's beating fast too, yes. Now, what medications might a parent think about giving to bring that fever down? So, say they're really anxious about a febrile seizure.
So you can give the main two things, acetaminophen and ibuprofen. Acetaminophen you can give at any age, ibuprofen 6 months of age and older. The one thing you don't want to give your child is aspirin, okay, because that can cause some serious side effects with the liver and the brain. So you want to stay away from aspirin, and usually for under two, you always want to make sure to talk to your doctor about the correct dosage, because you obviously don't want to overdose. Most parents are concerned about overdosing, but a lot of parents I see underdose.
Is that right?
Yes, they actually underdose because they don't want to give too much, but then the fever never goes away. So those are kind of the things you want to look for.
And, you know, one thing that we do in my home country is we do tepid sponging.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might do that just holding the child on your knee, put a little plastic sheet and a towel there, and then you might just get a tepid water. So it would be about 98, 99 degrees, mm-hmm. so it feels comfortable to the touch.
And you don't want cold water. A lot of people think cold water, but cold water will actually make your baby shiver and increase their body temperature even more.
Right, because shivering is muscles working, and
correct.
So that's going to do that. And so you just try and damp your bubby mm-hmm. down.
And that pretty much, as the water evaporates off the skin, that's what cools the body down.
Okay. And if you can get them into the tepid bath, mm-hmm. you might fill the tepid bath and actually be able to distract
them
with toys
mm-hmm.
and be able to then play with them. They'll often actually let you play and throw water over
yeah.
them and things. So that can be a really easy way to try and get that temperature down without
right.
necessarily resorting to medications if you're very nervous about that. Or you want to avoid the medications, then that's another way to do it.
Correct.
Now, prevention is always better than cure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just put my wet baby down here. How could parents reduce the number of illnesses that little ones get?
The main thing is hand washing. So you always want to, as soon as you come into the house, make sure your kids are washing their hands, make sure that there is, you know, hand sanitizer in different rooms of the house. So you always want to have them wash their hands. Teach your child how to cover their nose and mouth when coughing or sneezing. A big thing, of course, is making sure your vaccines and immunizations are up to date, because they prevent a lot of the serious bacterial illnesses that cause meningitis and pneumonia. And keeping your child
a healthy
diet.
Yeah, a healthy diet.
That works
lots
for
of fruits,
everything.
Vegetables
and water and getting enough sleep as well.
So plenty. Sometimes water can be a challenge with kids.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to drink water. But really push that. That's in their best interest. And sleep, encouraging them to have, and regularity in their daily schedule is
correct,
isn't it, for good health, believe it or not, because we're such cyclical beings. Our heart has a cycle, our breathing has a cycle, and so our daytime should have a cycle as well. Well, that's excellent. Vitamin D can also, 300 units a day can also reduce the incidence of illnesses. Mm-hmm. Though there's a lot of research going on, and it's more at research stage at this time, but that's also important. Well, many viewers are telling us that they love our cooking and our exercise demos. Well, I've got good news for you. We've got both today in our next segment. We'll be back right after the break. In today's medical news report, do apples really taste better with a cartoon? Heavy salt or salt heavy? Cranberries and UTIs, just an old wives' tale. And kids, colds and vitamin D. Many manufacturers use cartoon characters on the packaging of their confectionery to entice children to choose them. Co-director at the Cornell Center for Behavioral Economics says we need to be as smart as the companies that are selling these less healthy foods. So, elementary school students were offered apples and cookies with lunch. Children were 50% more likely to opt for an apple when it was branded with a cartoon sticker, such as Sesame Street character Elmo, than if the apples were not stickered. For cookies, it made no difference. So moms, put a sticker on the fruit you serve. Let's fight fire with fire. A new study published in Pediatrics found that US children and teens consume as much salt as adults. They also found that the risk for hypertension increased with each gram of salt consumed per day, especially for overweight children and teens. We're never too young to be concerned about salt. Train your taste buds early and reduce your risk of high blood pressure. Researchers have found that cranberry juice made with high concentrations of proanthocyanidins cut children's risk of repeat UTIs by two-thirds, when compared with a non-cranberry juice. Cranberries are rich in these substances, which prevent bacteria from sticking to cell walls, such as the lining of our bladder. However, getting kids to drink a pure cranberry juice without excess sugar can be a challenge. So you might opt for cranberry tablets instead. And remember, follow the label. Vitamin D deficiency is common in children living in Mongolia, partly because of the long winters that limit sun exposure for many months of the year. Researchers in the US have found that Mongolian children who drank vitamin D fortified milk experienced only half the winter colds of those who used unfortified milk. Even in the US, about 20% of children are vitamin D deficient. So be sure your kids get plenty of safe exposure to sunlight to help prevent those winter colds. I'm Dr. Merida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
While reading The Great Hope, I came across a passage that filled me with such joy and promise, I'd like to share it with you. As travelers perishing from thirst welcome with joy a living water spring, so did these souls receive the message of heaven. The laborers in the field, the artisans in the workshop, cheered their daily toil by talking of the precious truths of the Bible. At evening, instead of resorting to the wine shops, they assembled in one another's homes to read God's word and join in prayer and praise. This gives me hope, because just through prayer and praise, through fellowshipping with each other, we will shine the light of Jesus through our communities.
We're back in Justin's Kitchen, one of our favorite segments in the show. Justin, wow, what have you got for us today?
I've got something really, really tasty. I think you're going to love it. Today we're going to make oat crackers.
Oh, yum.
Yeah.
Yum, yum.
Oat crackers, let me tell you, these things are awesome. 3 cups of quick oats, 3 cups of wheat flour, 3 teaspoons of brown sugar, 1 teaspoon of salt, 3/4 cups of oil, and 1 1/4 cups of water. Real simple recipe, but you put it all together, make some real nice crackers.
Wow, that's nice, because often I look at the crackers in the store and it's got like 27 ingredients, and I'm thinking, what are half these things?
Exactly.
But this has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, and some water.
A little bit of water. Yeah.
6 ingredients.
Well, let's get started.
Okay.
I'm just going to put these oats in here, the quick oats.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't want to use the jumbo oats, would you?
Yeah.
You might break your teeth.
Exactly. I'll add some flour in here.
Shall I start?
Sure.
Mixing that for you.
A little bit of brown sugar here, just to give it that delicious flavor.
All right.
Nice work. You've done this before, haven't you?
Well, I'm learning from you because you're the
Okay.
You're the expert.
Put some salt in there. Yeah, get some salt going. And a little bit of oil.
Now, it looks like we're just making up about 1/3 of the mix. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Now, just a little bit of water.
All right, I'm handing it over to the expert now because I'm sure you what to do there.
We're just going to make sure this is nice and incorporated.
That was so easy.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Woohoo.
Just a few
minutes. I think I better stop buying my crackers. I better start making them.
For sure. And they're going to be so healthy. They're filled with fiber and all those good things.
Yeah, because the bran that's in oats is actually very good for the heart.
Okay. The heart?
Yeah, and for blood pressure, which we're talking about tomorrow night.
Okay. So. Now, I've sometimes heard it said that the fiber in quick oats is less effective than other oats, but I understand that's not really true.
They are a little bit more processed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's still there. As far as I know, it's still there.
Well, I've got a trick for you.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what this plastic is stuck to the bench.
So we need to roll this dough out into a flat sheet so we can turn them into crackers, right?
Right.
Well, that can be kind of a messy process, but if you take and put a sheet of plastic wrap on the counter,
okay,
put your dough right in the middle of it like
right.
this, and then put another sheet of plastic wrap right on top.
All right. I do the squidging?
Sure,
I love
sure,
squidging.
Sure, sure.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to play in the mud all the time. Mud pies was the thing I cooked most.
Well, this is mud that you can eat.
Really?
Yeah.
Woohoo! I'm going to leave you to to roll this out.
This is my favorite part.
Really?
It kind of reminds me of
I probably should hold that up for you to make it a little easier, huh?
Reminds me of doing construction work. This is like a steamroller or something.
Concrete?
Yeah, I feel like I'm building a road.
I hope it doesn't turn out like concrete.
I'm sure it'll be even more delicious than concrete.
Can't say I've ever tasted it. Have you? I'm worried about him now.
Okay. So we've got our sheet of oat cracker dough here.
All right.
And
let's see. We're running out of space. Let's roll that over and put that. You're going to make me do this bit. He has that look in his eye.
I can
see it.
This is a hands-on experience here.
Really? Right. Well, here we go. If I lift this up and let's see.
Nicely done.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We'll just kind of
we'll pretend that didn't happen.
We'll pretend. So what we'll want to do here is just trim this nicely off the corner. And then you can give this to the kids to make something really creative out of. That's what I used to love when my mum was baking. She'd give me the edges of the pastry. Though we could actually use it for the corners, but let's just do it that way. Now, how did you get those lovely little squares?
Well, It really helps if you score the crackers.
Great.
Like this. So you can just break them apart once they come out of the oven.
He's not just a pretty face.
Well, I do know how to score a cracker.
But do you know how to score a football match?
That remains to be seen.
Yeah. I haven't come to grips with American football yet. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, so you just pop that in the oven, and when it comes out, it looks just like this.
Oh, and what have you got that served with?
This is probably my favorite substance in the world. It's called hummus.
And we're going to have to make that.
I think we should.
We should make that one night.
You know, for me, the cracker is merely a method for conveying the hummus to my mouth. You know, it's just a mechanism.
Really?
For hummus conveyance.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Do let's.
Mmm. Wow, that's great. That is great.
It's almost as good as the hummus, actually.
Yeah.
I could eat those on their own.
You almost don't need the hummus.
You almost don't. Mm-mm. Mmm.
That was easy.
There's not much cleanup. And?
Great healthy
really
crackers.
Really healthy crackers. Well, thank you. I really shouldn't talk with my mouth full, should I?
We'll allow it.
But, you know, it's a good idea to learn a new sport or a new activity. And just watch the next ageless spot.
Are you considering learning a new sport? It could be a huge advantage. Recent research found that men who improved their physical fitness reduced their chance of death by 44%. Middle-aged and older men who began a moderately vigorous sports activity like cycling, soccer, basketball, or hiking lived longer. They also have lower rates of death from heart disease. It is time to get off the bench. Taking up a new sport is another ageless advantage.
Talking about sports and physical activity, here we are ready to enjoy another one of our favorite segments. Are you ready? You can't stay on the couch. Come on, off the couch, because Sean's here. What have you got for all of us today, Sean?
All right, so today we're using an exercise ball. Okay, it's also known as a physio ball, but we're going to call it exercise stability ball today, okay?
They call them Swiss balls as well sometimes,
Swiss balls,
don't they?
Yeah.
So do you know, and where I work, they have women labor on these.
Oh, my gosh, we won't even go there.
We won't go there. We'll just call it.
We'll stay out of that one.
Yeah, okay.
So the first exercise, when you get a stability ball, you want to have a seat, all right?
All right.
And just getting used to being on the ball, okay? Posture up, chest up, and just getting used to being there, stabilizing, recruiting muscles to keep your balance, right? What we're going to do is I want you to just have a seat, okay? And then
you realize I can't even ride a bicycle, don't you? You're not going to let me fall.
If you fall off, I promise not to laugh. I promise.
That's not very reassuring.
I'll turn my back. I promise. So I want you to roll forward. Okay.
Okay.
Roll forward. Keep rolling. The first exercise we're going to demo today is a chest press. Okay. I want you to put your hips up. Okay. I'm going to put both weights in your hand. Okay. What I want you to do is imagine your elbows are going to be pressing against this ball here, right?
All right.
What you're going to do is press straight up, working your chest, right? But I want the weights to come together, okay? We're working the chest here.
Okay? Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay.
So it's almost like you're doing a push-up, but the opposite direction, all right? Recruiting a lot of stabilizer muscles, using your glutes to keep you up, using your chest to squeeze. Every time you come up, squeezing your chest. Now, if I were to push you, then you see there are certain muscles that have to be recruited in order for you to stabilize on that ball.
That's
right?
True. Yeah. So you're actually working everything from
your core muscles.
Sort of hips
front.
Up.
There you go. From the belly button all the way to your glutes and the lower back. So that's working your chest. If you're a beginner, I'll say about 10 to 12 reps just to get started. As you get more advanced, you can drop one weight and you'll see right now your body now has to acclimate and this side will have to balance the weight on that side, right?
Right,
so
and then you'd swap breath. Over.
You
and
sides. Oh, you have one side bigger than the other. All right. So while you're there, since you're there, keep your glutes working. We're going to use this one weight above your head.
Okay.
Right? Put both hands on. And this is going to work your abdominal area, twisting, all right, your lats as well, all right? What I want you to do is just twist, stay right there, and twist. Twist the entire body, but keep your arms straight. Keep the arms straight. Come back up, all right? Twist, all right? All the way up again, and just twist all the way to the side.
Ah,
yes. So
gotcha.
What you're going to feel is, are your
obliques kicking it? I was cheating, wasn't I?
You were cheating. I'll tell you later. All right? So there it is. So the more advanced, and what you're doing right there, because your core is strong, you can go over to the side. But if you're just beginning, you would start and just go about right here until you get more comfortable on the physio ball.
Yep.
As you move a little bit more advanced, you can go all the way over, recruiting some of your lats and the obliques just to kind of keep you balanced. All right. Again, work in the core.
I feel a little bit like a sailboat in a rough storm.
So I should blow you.
And this is my mast.
So I'll
my sails left long ago.
So again, you're working some triceps, you're working some lats, you're working some core, keeping the glutes up, all right? So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to take this weight, and we're going to work some abdominal area, right?
Mm-hmm.
You come off for a second. Don't fall, I promise. I will not laugh. I won't.
Yeah?
So I'll demo this one just to show you, all right? You want to open up the abdominal area, right? It's a great exercise. You put your hands here, and all I want you to do is extend all the way out. Once you get to a point where your body starts shaking and your abdomen starts recruiting more muscles, that's when you come back to the start position. So you start here as if you're praying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go all the way down. Breathe, relax, and come back, okay? If you fall on this one, I promise.
You promise you will love.
I'll support you.
From over there. I think he's telling Porky's right now.
There you go. So you'll feel your abdominal area open up, all right? Mm-hmm. The further you go, now go right back to the start, all right? Now I want you to put your hand down a little bit lower.
Right.
And then come up.
Okay.
Okay? As if you're going into a plank position.
There it is.
So the body just started shaking a little bit. That's when you go back.
Okay? All right.
That's your body now recruiting muscles in order for you to stabilize. And that's what you want. Using stabilizer muscles to build that foundation. And as you build that foundation, you could do more advanced exercises.
And how many might we do of this?
Just to begin, say about 10 to 12,
okay.
10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
You could do for a particular amount of time. You could do for 30 seconds, mm-hmm. 60 seconds. The goal here is to open that abdominal area up and then contract. So every time you come back to that start position, you got to pull your hands in and crunch. Blow it out.
So I got to remember to breathe.
Breathe. You get hypoxic, you start seeing stars, and you can blame me. So I don't want you to blame me, and I don't want you to fall. So all the way down. And then all the way back up. Perfect. All right. As you get more advanced, you could add more exercises. And we could talk more about that on Wednesday when I incorporate more partner-based exercises. So kind of cool. But this is a physio ball. You can get one of these for about 10 to 15 bucks, depending on your size.
So size? What sort of size? How many sizes are there?
It comes in two sizes, big and small. Okay.
Okay.
That's easy. What to note is, I'll turn to the side here. When you sit down on the ball, you want to make sure that your hips, this one needs a little bit more air, but you want to make sure that your hips are not really low. So you want about a 90-degree angle here to show that it's the right size.
So that probably needs a little air.
A little bit of air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good guide.
Yeah.
Well, is that all you've got for us today?
Am I off the hook now? You want to add another
one? No, I think I better...
Come on, we could do another one. I could go all night. Come on.
Oh, he doesn't need any encouraging.
You egg me on. I'll provide it for you. All right.
Thanks, Sean.
Oh, you're very
great
welcome.
Great to have you today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for posting your comments and questions on our Facebook page. Don't forget that you can call us live. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And beginning today, we have a new way to connect with you. Yes, you can text us now. And just remember, the number for texting is 301-960-5144. Send your questions and your comments our way. Grab your phone, text us right now. Let's get connected. And also, we have not forgotten our international viewers. If you want to share with us from overseas, please call us 301-960-5144. And you can leave us your comments and your questions. Now, I have a a question here. What does the use of antibacterial soaps do to a baby's immune system? Well, that's a good question. Antibacterial soaps really just make our environment more hygienic. Some people would argue that's a good thing. Others say, well, it's good to challenge a baby's immune system so that they can build immunity. So I think that one's a bit out for debate. I don't have very good evidence one way or the other. Now, we're still taking your health questions on fever in toddlers. Post a comment on our Facebook page or send us a tweet. Remember, you can also text us 301-960-5144. Dr. Shanti Thomas-King will join me again after the break. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be right back.
Because of you, Hope Channel is reaching lives around the world.
This Hope Channel is flawless. I mean, it's there is nothing you can find about it that is wrong. Everything is in sequence. It's beautiful. It's well put together. So I know the Hope Channel was put there for such a time as this in the homes by God. Hope Channel were to die today, what would be the purpose in life? That's how important they are to me and in my home. May God bless them, truly.
Hope Channel is changing lives because of the support of viewers like you. If you'd like to assist financially with the mission of Hope Channel, call us at 888-4-HOPE-TV. That's 888-4-HOPE-TV. Or write us at the following address.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, and we're especially looking for questions related to fever in toddlers. Post your questions, your comments on Facebook. Just search for Go Healthy for Good. You can also send us a tweet, or better yet, you can call us right now. Just pick up the phone. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And beginning today, there's that new way to communicate with us, text messaging. Just text us on 301-960-5144. This number can also be used to leave us a voice message if you're calling from outside of the US. We just received a question from a concerned mother. Are there any natural therapies for fevers in children? That's a good question. The demonstration I performed earlier with tepid sponging or hydrotherapy, which would be warmer water, but you want to be sure your child's not going to have a seizure. You can use hot water, just raise their fever a little more so that it really boosts the immune system. So you'd put them in what we might call a hot half bath, but you want to be careful that you don't overdo it and always keep their head cool with a cold cloth on their heads if you've got children sitting in a hot half bath. But I've seen that work so nicely with little ones. Now, I've got a question here for you, Shanti. My doctor told me that my baby has RSV. Can you please tell me what that is and what I should do?
Well, RSV is definitely very common in the fall and winter. It stands for respiratory syncytial virus. It's a virus that affects the lower airways of a child's lungs. So usually it affects children less than one, and the way they usually present is with just a lot of congestion, and sometimes kids can wheeze, and the main thing we're looking for is, you know, are they really working hard to breathe? Now, it is a virus, so unfortunately there's not a magic medicine or a shot to give a child for RSV. They do get better, but the main thing you want to watch for is how hard they're working to breathe. And some kids, their oxygen can also go low with RSV. So you really want to watch for that. We normally don't hospitalize children with RSV unless their oxygen is low or they are struggling hard to breathe, and then we need to admit them more for observation and to help support their breathing.
That sounds worrying, having a low oxygen. How might a parent tell that that's happening in a child?
Mainly they're looking for color change. Now, not all the time do you have a color change. Sometimes it may just be slightly lower than normal. Ideally, you want an oxygen level that's greater than 94%. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if a child is at 92%, you may not see it as a parent. But you're looking for, is the child pale? Are they turning blue, particularly around the lips? That's usually what you would start to see.
So a blue tinge around the lips is a really worrying sign.
Correct.
Of course, usually by then, children have really been doing a lot of hard work with their chest, and so you'd want to be looking under their clothes and seeing what's happening with their chest wall, wouldn't you?
Yes. You want to make sure that they're not retracting, meaning that their ribs aren't showing.
The little bits below, exactly. In between the ribs, are sucking in.
Yes, you're not seeing that. And also you want to look at their neck and make sure they're not really pulling in here at their clavicle, or with younger kids, flaring at their nostrils. Those are all signs.
So the little nostrils go out, mm-hmm. The muscles in the neck start really tensing
up.
Breaths. The muscles in between the ribs are sucking in when they're trying to get a breath.
Correct.
And if they're going blue, boy, you better get to the hospital pretty quick.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great... Now, how long will that last for? Because she also asked what to do about it.
RSV can last, it depends on the age. Usually the younger babies, they can last for about a week to sometimes 2 weeks. But the main thing you want to do for RSV is suction the baby's nose. So you want to keep those secretions out of the nose. So you can just put a couple drops of saline in the nostrils and then use the little bulb that usually they give you in the hospital and just suck out the nostrils. And you want to make sure you don't want to lay your baby flat. You want to make sure to always keep them a little propped up so the secretions are able to drain. And also just keeping a humidifier or vaporizer in the room to make the air moist also helps the baby breathe better.
So some moist air being propped up. Yeah, none of us likes to lie flat when we've got a lot of secretions.
Correct.
It makes us feel like we're choking, mm-hmm. doesn't it? So have that little bit of propped up kind of lean on the bed. Now, there's another question here. Are there ways to prevent allergic reactions early in life? Now, it's a little off topic, but mm-hmm. should we try and tackle that question? Ways to prevent allergic reactions early in life?
Not really. Generally, there's debate as to whether, mothers shouldn't, if they're breastfeeding, a mother shouldn't eat peanuts or a lot of dairy or those type of seafood, those type of foods. But they've done a few studies and really not conclusive. Allergists really don't recommend that you withhold that from the mother's diet. But there are certain things that we see if a kid is what we would label allergic. So if a child, baby starts showing signs of eczema, like really dry skin on the body early in life, like around 4 to 6 months of age, then you would think, okay, this child tends to be an allergic child. And usually that's also runs in families. So for those children, you'd probably want to just go slow when you introduce new foods. So don't introduce a whole bunch of foods, new foods at once. Just go slowly and see if you see any reactions.
And breastfeeding also is good at preventing allergies. Breastfed babies are less likely to get the eczemas and the other allergic reactions.
Yes, and even seasonal allergies later in life, ear infections, a whole host of stuff.
right. That's true. Well, thank you for your questions. That's great. It's nice to have you asking us questions and connecting with us. Please send more questions to us. And, children, it's really important that we drive these messages home. So I'd like to just give some summaries of what we've said today. I think we've got some graphics for that. That if we can have them up on the screen. When your child is ill, just remember that you need to take note of their age, their general condition. So how, if they're young, you need to be more attentive. Their general condition. So if they're generally unwell and lethargic and just looking bad, even though their temperature might not be really high, you would want to get medical help. However, if their temperature is coming up, but they're still bouncing around and sort of happy wheezes, as we might call them, then you might not worry so much. But when that temperature gets to over 104, you do need to take them to see the doctor. And remember those telltale signs of meningitis, especially that rash with bacterial meningitis. Well, children need extra care and attention. Preventing illness is by far their best health plan. And so remember to give them a healthy diet, plenty of fruits and vegetables, whole grains rather than white bread. You'd want to be giving them wholemeal bread once they're eating, of course. And remember, you need to give them a nice schedule, time that they normally would eat, time for play, time to sleep, and don't rob your children of sleep. That is so important for their immune systems. But you know, activity also boosts the immune system. When we exercise, we release natural killer cells. Natural killer cells are the really important part of our immune system to fight viruses. Now, I'm not saying when the child is sick, you send them out to play. But if they're nice and active, they will have a healthy immune system that will prevent them picking up those viruses. When they do get sick, vitamin C can help those coughs and colds. It can shorten the episode, dry up some of that mucus, and just generally make them feel a little bit better. So when they get sick, continue to support their immune system. Monitor them closely. Be watching that just a one-off temperature is really not sufficient. You need to be continuing to measure their temperature during the illness to be sure that it's not going higher and higher. Take them to the doctor when signs and symptoms indicate that you need to. And I want to thank you, Dr. Shanthi, for being on the show with us today. It's been lovely to spend some time together and play with our baby. Yes, and I want to thank you, viewers, for joining me today. Thanks for watching. Go Healthy for Good. And I'll see you tomorrow.